Welcome, everyone, to another episode of One Mom to Another.
Yo, yo, what up?
That is my son, Daniel, who is with me.
Stop recording. That was a joke.
No, I'm keeping it.
I really thought that was...
No, okay. We're keeping it.
From the top. I'm locked in now.
Daniel is here. And we're going to talk about Zen parenting. Daniel, why don't you give us the definition of Zen parenting?
Okay, so this is a term that I came up with on a road trip with Dad. We were probably moving our family. I think this was the Minneapolis to Connecticut move. And we were talking about parenting and parenting styles. And I kind of coined this phrase to describe yours and Dad, or at least my experience with you and Dad being my parents throughout my childhood, preteen, teenage years. And that was Zen parenting. My experience was that I felt completely comfortable talking to you and Dad about what was going on at school or what people were saying in the locker rooms or about the parties that were happening at school or, you know, concerns that I had in life or whatever else. Totally comfortable opening up to you guys as if you were close, trusted personal friends, but also I was terrified of you counting to three. Now, you know, there was still, and I'm terrified is kind of a strong word, but I mean that if you told me to do something and you started counting one, it was snap to it, go do it. Don't push back. There wasn't like a too familiar, too friendly to where we didn't recognize your guys' authority as mom and dad, and you ran the household and we respected that and didn't ever try to push those boundaries because we were so close. So it's kind of that, that blend between being a friend, but also not a friend, a trusted counselor, and still being recognized as being in charge, because I think sometimes you can see one or the other extreme in parenting without that blend. And that blend right in the middle is what I would call Zen parenting. How was that for a 10-minute explanation?
Sorry. Yeah, that's a great explanation, you know, and it's hard to get there, you know. That's a question that we ask as parents. How do we know our kids can come to us and talk to us about anything? And on the other hand, how do they, respect you? You know, you don't want to cross that friend line because you can't be friends, quotation marks around the friends, with your children, because it just doesn't work. You've got to be parents.
Right.
And I would say too, you know, Melanie is our oldest, and I would say for sure he learned as the kids went, and her younger years, probably she did not feel that way.
Yeah. Well, it should be pointed out, I'm the fifth of seven children, kind of more towards that tail end. My wife, Natalie, and I, we have four kids. And I would say absolutely that first child is such an experiment in every way, shape, and form. And you still cling to this idea that you need to be able to control their behavior and they have to make right choices all the time.
Yeah. Well, and the thing of it is with your first child, you're so afraid you're going to blow it. You're so afraid. You are so keenly aware that you do not know what you're doing, that the only way we can figure out how to parent is to try and control everything. And the second thing to that is it takes us a few kids to realize that our kids do make wrong choices. And so, you know, once you've been through a couple children and you see the wrong choices that they make, the first time your oldest child lies to you or does something wrong, I mean, you're devastated.
It's a long look in the mirror, you know?
Yeah. where have I gone wrong? How did we fail this 3-year-old, you know? What did we do to cause her to, you know, behave in such a way?
Questioning every decision you've ever made.
That's right. By the time you get to child number, you know, 3 or 4, you're like, yeah, that sounds about right. You know, when they do something wrong or like, all right, let's sit down and talk about it. And so, I mean, I think that Melanie and Ed, as Dad and I got there with Melanie, but and William, but I think it's really important to emphasize that it takes time, you know, to figure it all out and kind of establish that kind of a relationship.
Yeah, there's a meme that Natalie really likes. It's about how, like, the first time, all right, in Mary Poppins' voice, all right, kids, time to get ready to get out the door, get your shoes on, or whatever. And then it's like 3 minutes later, Batman voice, I said, let's go. You know what I mean?
yeah.
And that's how we feel. Like we just are working towards that Zen parenting. That's our goal.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like, we feel like we're if Zen parenting is like a straight line, we're kind of up and down, above it, below it.
Yeah.
Hunting around that, you know, that's what we're aiming for, but we're still are learning as we go. We had one moment when I realized that, you know, maybe we weren't being quite so great at Zen parenting for this 3. Every night putting him to bed was a knockdown, drag out fight. He would throw fists. I would put him on my lap and kind of bear hug him till he calmed down, and he would.
This is Finn, right?
This is Finn, our oldest. Yep. Yeah. So on the theme of kind of experimenting with your oldest children, he's so frustrated with having to go to bed, and he looks at me straight in the eyes. I'll never forget this. And he's trying to just cut me as deep as you possibly can with his words. Looks at me. He says, "Dad, he's 3 years old." He says, "Dad, you're not my friend, and I don't like Chick-fil-A." So
that gets deep.
Cracking the granite, you know, because it's my favorite. I love Chick-fil-A, and he just wanted to inflict some deep wounds in me. And that's when I thought, oh man, what are we doing? I had that moment, like you're talking about, Mom, where we're just questioning every decision we've ever made. Like, well, hopefully the next one turns out better, you know. Let's see. Bless your little heart.
Yeah. I know. It just, and you know, the other thing too, is that at first you don't know what battles are worth fighting. And so you fight them all. And I think if you're fighting all the battles, the kids get a little war weary, and they don't want to talk to you because everything that they do, there's an upset over. And so you really have to start choosing battles. And I think what's important, and what I hope we're going to do in this podcast, is kind of lay out things to do that can kind of start establishing this Zen parenting and these kinds of relationships and have these things in place. And one of them is to choose your battles.
Yeah. Yeah, it's so true. So on that theme really quick, you know, we've got some good friends, and they have a child who is the pickiest eater that I've ever come across. Wonderful, you know, kiddo, but really basically, you know, eats noodles. That's
right,
it.
Right.
And this friend of ours gave us some really wise advice. We were kind of just chatting about it, and she said, you know, I realized that, along the theme of picking your battles, we go to the war, we go to the mattresses on so much that this was just going to be one thing that, I mean, how hard is it to boil some noodles?
Right.
And there's so much other stuff we're fighting with. The dinner table should be something that should be somewhere, rather, a place where the family is together and unified and happy, and not a place to draw battle lines in this particular instance, you know. And I thought that was just really, really wise advice.
That is wise, and it's great advice. And I think, you know, also too, everybody's battles are different. You know, we don't have to look at everybody else and say, well, they make their kids eat what's on the table. So I guess, do I have to do that? You know, we can take our, we can decide what battles we're going to choose in our own home and what's important to us and not worry about what other people are doing, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
I touched on this a little bit too, but I had to learn to stop freaking out. You know, when your kids tell you stuff, when they tell you whatever it is that they're going to tell you, oh, all right, you know, and be cool and calm and invite that conversation. But the thing not to do is, you know, mom, I lied to you. You what? And on we go. Never, they're never going to approach you again.
You got very good at that. And Natalie, her mom, Robin, you know, Natalie has just vivid memories of, you know, just giving her mom the third degree Robin and just, you know, I can't believe you're not, you know, respect me and all this, you don't trust me. And Robin's go-to line was, nevertheless, the answer is no. And that would just send my wife into a teenage Natalie, a fit of rage even beyond that. Mm-hmm. You know, when we came with problems, my memory is always, hey, we're on the same team. There's nothing we can't work out together.
Right.
And so I never really felt, you know, like I had to hide much because coming to you, it was, all right, well, let's roll up our sleeves and get to work. Yeah. You know, if you're being honest with me, there's nothing we can't work out together. You know, I'm sure sometimes you were like when I accidentally broke my brother's arm, allegedly.
Allegedly
wrestling over a basketball. I'm sure you were more than somewhat frustrated, but it always just felt like, you know, problems can be worked on together as a team.
Well, that's right. And that's the attitude that you take into it. And I think though that process, in that process, you learn how to not freak out.
Yeah.
We were always so grateful when the kids would come talk to us. You know, you have this, and I've said this before on a previous podcast, you have the child that holds on to their story so tight, right? So you spend 3 hours trying to get through the lie. And then, you know, by the time you're done trying to get through the lie and then talking about what went wrong, you are so frustrated and exhausted at the end that they get a consequence for lying. They get a consequence for what they did, and they get a consequence because you're annoyed. And so if a child comes to you and says, hey, I've got to talk, you're almost really relieved because now you can parent and you can teach.
Yeah.
And the idea of being on the same team. And so even though we think I've got to control, you know, so nothing bad happens, is the easier way. Really the easier way is to take a deep breath, don't overreact, and encourage those kinds of conversations. Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally. And it's funny, as a parent now, you know, you see it too. I feel like while I still, you know, feel like I'm having a full-on mental collapse trying to get their teeth brushed and their jammies on.
Right.
They came to me with real life problems or missteps or, you know, goofs in their life. You want nothing more as a parent than to be a team member and a problem solver and work with them and work through that, you know?
Yeah. So. And there are so many little things that you can do to help them know that you're not going to overreact. They spill milk. They make a mess. Do you know, you know, they bring mud on all the floors. I mean, all of those kinds of things, you know, especially the spilling of milk or water, that's always so embarrassing right at the table or wherever. Just, you know, they're going to do it. This is what's going to happen. Hey, you've got mud on your shoes, you know, turn around, let's get them off. But I think if they see us overreacting to everything, then the big things, they are sure they're going to get, you know, get in trouble for.
Yeah. So you're saying you're actually, what I'm hearing is that you're glad that I took a Sharpie to the reupholstered couches that you'd spent weeks working on. That's what I heard.
Now the Sharpie, the couch was a brand new couch.
Oh, that, was it? I thought,
Yeah. And it was, I had forgot about this. It was the first couch I had ever bought that wasn't, you know, a hand-me-down or, you know, something. And you took a marker to it. And I overreacted and I was upset. And you said to me, do you remember what you said?
Yes, I remember. This is one of my best lines of all time. This was classic. I said, Mom, well, what do you love more, the couch or me?
And I said, I don't know right now.
I knew you needed to practice your Zen parenting, Mom.
That's right.
I had a plan, you know. I knew that was going to pay off.
That was a day. Yeah, that was a day when the Zen parenting was not in practice. Oh, my goodness.
Well, and, you know, karma has paid that forward because Natalie and I bought 4 years ago, we finally, you know, bought our first quote-unquote nice car. It was a 2013 Honda Odyssey minivan, black.
Mm-hmm.
And Betsy realized that if she took a white rock from our walkway up to our house, she could draw pictures on the side of it, you know.
Oh no.
2.5-year-old Betsy.
Yeah.
And on both sliding door panels.
Oh wow.
Circles. And that was our own, what do you love more, this car or me?
Yeah. Moment. So yeah.
Just know that you're, you know, you proclaiming that everything we've done to you is going to come back to us has so far proven.
So far proven correct. Yeah. So, you know, it's not going to get it right every single time. And, you know, that's okay too. And I think, you know, we talked a little bit about, you know, not overreacting, you know, of keeping calm when they come to, you know, tell you about, you know, something maybe that they did, a wrong choice that they did. But another thing too, that I think kind of establishes this in parenting is, you know, children have really deep dreams and hopes for their lives.
Oh, they feel things. They really, you might feel things. Children and teenagers feel things.
Yeah. With their whole being.
Oh yeah.
And it's important to take that seriously, even though it comes out very dramatic. And maybe, you know, you would think that to laugh or to minimize, but really, if you take it seriously and understand it, it's a great way for a child to know that you are all on the same team. One time, Caroline came into my room at night. She had already gone to bed, and she said, "Mom, I need to take knitting classes." And I said, "Oh, okay." She goes, "Mom, knitting is my passion, and I feel it to the depth of my soul." And I said, "Wow." Well, let's find you some lessons. And, you know, that she and I laugh at that, you know, chuckle over that now, you know, how deeply she felt knitting. Sometimes she'll say something and that she really wants to do something, and I'll say, "As much as, you know, you wanted to knit." And we can chuckle about it now that she's an adult. But if I had laughed at her at that night, she never would have brought me any more of her soul's desires.
Right.
And so, you know, that's just kind of a caution. I mean, Michael always wanted to be a ninja. I said, you know, I didn't. It's not like he didn't feel it in the depths of his soul. I don't know, maybe he did. But, you know, they all want to just do something. They all have dreams and hopes. And
yeah, and we talked about this with Eric and Will and Michael too. But, you know, Dad was so good at this also.
Yeah.
You know, whether it was Caroline and Michael doing show choir, mm-hmm. whether it's myself and Eric running cross country, he really got into it, took an interest in it, and made it important to him as well. And I think that, you know, that was huge. That was huge. Yeah. I mean, I my other big hobby besides running was playing the guitar, which obviously that was right in the Dad's wheelhouse.
Right.
So, like, he had to try hard there, but in other aspects, there was a serious, you know, curiosity and mm-hmm. desire to be a part of that. And I think really strengthened our relationship.
Yeah. I think if you had told Dad you wanted to learn how to dance.
Yeah.
He would have done the research. He would have asked the questions. He would have been to every recital. He would have, you know, that really is a strong suit. He just.
Yeah. Dance, robotics, computer coding, whatever was important. to the kids. Dad made it important to himself.
And so sincere. He would even come to me later and say, I had this great conversation with, you know, whoever, let's just, you know, with Daniel, let's just say, he's just really picking this up, or they're just really doing this, or boy, that race was just, I mean, he is learning, you know, learning when to, you know, put on the speed or whatever. He truly was interested down to the depths of his soul.
Yeah.
And still continues to be, whatever it is. So hopefully those are some good takeaways, some good stepping stones, or good things that you can start putting into place when they're young. That mom and dad is a safe place, and you know that they're all on the same team. So what the difference is, you know, with being your child's friend in Zen parenting is that when you Zen parent, you have that key in place of being on the same team, but you also can count to three, and they still need to respect you as their parents. You can't be the cool parents, you know, and take that piece out of it. You've got to have the discipline, I guess we should say, or that parental relationship. Am I saying that?
Yeah, Rona? Absolutely. And what's coming to my mind too, and I know we'll talk, you know, about this in a couple different angles, but you say the word discipline, and I think when I think of the discipline that you and Dad provided to us, it was a very clear representation. I'm even going to chuckle saying it because this is such a Cindy Andersonism. Let's say it with me, everybody. Choices have consequences, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, and that was, you know, so clearly instilled in us. And I think that was the major form of discipline, if you want to call it that, of my childhood was, you can choose your choices, but here are the consequences. And there was really no wiggling out of those or talking you out of those ever. I mean, frankly, it's my memory. It was this, you did this, this is the punishment.
Yeah.
End of the line, almost like, you know, nothing we can do about it. You know, these are your consequences.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, you know, that was also had to be evolved from the oldest too. I came to the conclusion that I didn't like punishing my children, and I didn't like anything arbitrary. So if they did something or something, and I had whatever my go-to was, it didn't even match what they had done. And so in that evolvement, I decided consequences need to match what happened. You know, if they, let's say you were skipping school. I mean, not that you ever did that, but I'll just leave that there.
My t-shirt rolled up in my leather jacket.
Yeah.
With slick back greaser hair like Danny Zuko. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
So let's say you skipped school and you got behind on your homework or whatever, you know, you missed work. Whatever the consequence for that was going to fit the crime, what, you know, however you want to say that. So you couldn't do anything until that homework was done. Or maybe there's going to be after school detention or something like that. But let's say you had a party on Friday night. The only thing keeping you from that party was getting that work done. I wasn't going to take the party away from you. Like, oh, you skip school? Well, you're not going to the party. No, it has to fit so that you understand, the children understand consequences. And
that they're not just being plucked arbitrarily. The consequences are not being plucked arbitrarily out of the sky by you. It's almost like here's the natural cause and effect.
The natural cause and effect. And that can be bad and good. You know, consequences come from good choices as well. And if you did get in trouble at school and you got some sort of a consequence from school, whether like again at a detention or having to come early or whatever it was, and I'm using the general you, not you, Daniel, but you know, all my children. then that's where you got your consequence. I support the school. You, if you got a consequence at school, or if the teacher called me about something, you guys knew I wasn't, I was going to support the teacher and I was going to support the school. So that's your consequence. So,
you know, and it's funny, I'm thinking this as you're saying this too, like, I think that I was a pretty well-behaved child through my teenage years.
Yes, you were.
And I don't take credit for that, because I think it was pretty self-serving in that I knew that if I just followed the rule, I'd get a much longer rope.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I always thought, you know, I was, you know, not being clever, but this is great. Just be obedient mm-hmm. and I get more privileges. And I think that is that philosophy working to perfection. You're demonstrating that choices have consequences on the good and bad side.
Right.
And that more trust, more privileges, more freedoms come when you demonstrate mm-hmm. that you can be obedient and listen to mom and dad. That just expands your world more. And that's a natural, you know, choice and consequence. Yeah. It's almost like a real life scenario playing out.
It does make sense. And I also think, you know, it's easier to hold to a consequence if it makes sense. If it's going to teach a lesson, if it's going to help you understand better, you know, help your children understand better their wrong choice and the consequences that come from those choices, then it's a lot easier to hold to it. If a parent arbitrarily says, oh, well, you did that. Well, 3 weeks down the road, don't even think you're going to that school dance. Well, then you feel kind of bad, because in 3 weeks, you're not upset anymore. You know, you've made a consequence out of being upset and frustrated, and they've been looking for it forever. And then you tend to go, you know what, if you say you're sorry, so then there's that parental deal. You know, if you say you're sorry, you're never going to do it again. We think you've learned your lesson. You can go.
Yeah. You know, I talked about you and dad. It always felt like consequences were set in stone. It's easier to hold to those. It's pretty impossible to hold to those consequences when they're unnatural, like you're talking about. Mm-hmm. You hit your brother, go out and cut the grass and clean all the gutters.
Right.
It has nothing to do with the fact that he hit his brother. It's not a natural consequence. Like, mm-hmm. okay, you have to spend time away from your brother. Or you have to write mm-hmm. him a sorry note, or you have to, you know, something mm-hmm. much more in line with the natural consequence of that. But if, mm-hmm. you know, it's a whole day of manual labor out in the backyard, mm-hmm. you're going to realize, you're going to come to your senses when the red, you know, when you're not mm-hmm. seeing red anymore, and you're going to say, what in the world? That's like,
yeah,
way too. And then you back off those consequences. And I think you're subconsciously teaching your kids that maybe mom and dad's consequences, they don't stick. I just need to wait a little while, and they'll make that deal.
Like
that, which we all do, you know. I don't mm-hmm. think anyone's perfect at it, but I think that's one thing too. You can help avoid by, like, what you're talking about, mom, trying to find what something more natural in line with mm-hmm. the choice that they made in terms of
their consequences. And if the child is out there doing manual labor for that didn't correlate, they're mad too. And they're determined to never let you know, to always, you know, when they did another wrong choice.
Yep.
And I'd also say too, that it is okay. Like we were saying, sometimes you do decide you did something a little bit too hasty, and, you know, sit down and have a nice talk with your children. And I think apologizing to your child for being frustrated and upset and overreacting is fine to do. And then to put in place a consequence that better fits the action.
Yeah. Yeah. I think sometimes our pride might keep us from having that conversation, and this, mm-hmm. this belief that as parents, we have to appear infallible mm-hmm. to our kids.
Yes. That principle
always
of,
right all the time, mm-hmm. et cetera. And that prevents us from sometimes just pulling aside and saying, well, that was an overreaction on dad's part. I'm so sorry about that. Here's, you know, mm-hmm. here's something a little more in line with.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause the flip side of 3 weeks later, realizing you overreacted and making the parental deal. The flip side is I said it. So that's it. I said that's what's going to happen, and that's what's going to happen. You know, that's kind of the flip side of that. And like most everything, it's in the middle of the road. If you overreacted, you overreacted. Maybe they had been fighting all day and you just thought, get out there and mow the lawn. Like, you know?
Right.
And, you know, I'm frustrated and annoyed, and now you're going to be frustrated and annoyed. And that's that just suits me fine in that, you know, in that moment.
That moment, right.
But we can always go and retract. You know, there's nothing wrong with a well-placed apology. And, You know, my favorite one, the kids always thought, talking about getting out of consequences or whatever. My favorite one that all you kids would say, well, you just don't trust me. Kids think that is their ace in the hole because they think parents are going to have to prove that they trust them. And I would always say, you've given me no reason to trust you.
Right.
I won't play with that one like that, but
it doesn't tug at your heartstring, Mom, at all.
No, trust is earned. But it would just crack me up. That was, I don't know, that's kind of a random thing to say, but that was a lot of my children's way of last ditch trying to get out of a consequence. You just don't trust me. Yeah, no.
You're right about that.
Right.
You are 100% right.
Yeah. True words were never spoken.
You have it exactly. Congratulations.
Yeah.
You know, I think another, well, first off, and I'll say too, I always felt like you and Dad did a really good job of validating our feelings. The emotions just rage inside of a teenager. And for me, they could only be expressed through Dave Matthews Band, you know, right. He was the only one who truly got me was Dave.
Good old
Even
Dave.
Though his lyrics make no sense and his voice sounds like nails on a chalkboard.
Yeah.
You know, hindsight's 20/20, but
right.
Man, that guy can play guitar. I always, you know, those emotions are so powerful. I think it meant a lot to me and to our siblings to just hear like even some simple validations from Mom and Dad. Sure. Mm-hmm. We don't really understand as a teenager how life works, but to hear from your parents who still aren't going to give in to you, but at least say, I know exactly where you're coming from, I think means a lot too. Validation goes a long way.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's true. Now, our relationship has always been very easy. And I include Dad in this too, in the we. Yeah. But I think one of the good consequences that come from Zen parenting is that the relationship becomes easier. And as everybody is just kind of that realization that they're on the same team, they know they're going to be heard. They understand that if they do something wrong, that there are consequences. Although if you have a conversation with a child who admits what they've done wrong, talks about how they felt, and you make goals of how to do better, there's no consequences. And so, you know,
my work here is done.
Yeah.
Dusting the hands off.
And so I think, you know, parenting is kind of a combination of that. It's kind of the conversation is a combination of those conversations. Sometimes kids act up during the day and consequences happen, you know, so it's just kind of a combination of all those things. But when sometimes you just have to pull the mom card and say, you know, I'm the mom in this situation, you know. Caroline, and she's going to laugh when she hears this, but I think Caroline, I don't know if she thinks that she should have been the mother or whether she thinks that she needed a mother in, not in general, but in specifics, because Caroline has always just made good choices. She
is an old soul who is, it just had it together to the point where when we were at BYU together, I sort of leaned on her as a big sister in a lot of ways. you know, yeah. Even though she's my younger sister. Yeah. She's very,
she has, it. Yeah, she has great inner intuition and has a great sense of knowing what is best for herself. And so it wasn't very often that I had to either to tell her no about anything. She usually looked at a situation and made a decision that I agreed with and often was in awe of that somebody, whatever yeah. age she was, could make such great choices. And so one time she was a teenager and she wanted to go do something. And I said, no. And she didn't, it wasn't arguing in a sense that you might think of an argument, but she said, Mom, I want to do this. And this, I've checked it out and on. And I just said, you know what, sweetie, whether you like it or not, I got to pull the mom card and I'm being your mother and you're not going.
How'd that go over, like a lead balloon?
Well, I mean, I wouldn't say lead, but I do believe eyes were rolled. Yeah. I mean, I do believe that.
Which for Caroline is a major, that's major protestation.
Right? Yeah, major protestation. But she also didn't go. So, but.
Yeah, and that's so big too. And I think, you know, we talk about obstacles for Zen parenting and sometimes our pride and the need to be right all the time. Mm-hmm. But on the flip side of that too, there's this major temptation. And as our kids are getting older, I mean, our oldest is 9, Finn is a wonderful young man, but I can already start to see it and feel that temptation now to just kind of give them whatever they want and be mm-hmm. the cool mm-hmm. parent, you know, make sure they have the nicest stuff, even if they don't work for it, to mm-hmm. remove obstacles in their way and always make life as easy as possible and kind of shelter and coddle and mm-hmm. That sort of thing. And I think that's also a major temptation too, because, you know, for better, you and Dad always knew where to draw the line and did not bend on what was important, you know, not bending. And, you know, we had part-time jobs and we bought a lot of our own stuff and worked hard and learned some valuable life lessons, and stuff just wasn't mm-hmm. given to us all the time, you know, and I think that is a major temptation and obstacle to Zen parenting, is that very real desire to give your kids everything.
Yeah. It's a huge pull. And where is the balance? You know, you never want your child to be uncomfortable. You don't want them to be made fun of. You want them to be happy. You know, I mean, that just is, parents just feel that way instinctually. And so to pave their path for them is, that temptation is really hard to figure out where that line is, you know?
Yeah.
You know, I would say to myself, well, what does that teach? Hmm. When is it a time to indulge a little bit? When is it time to, you know, keep them from getting hurt? And when is it a time to teach them? And if, you know, Michael wanted to, he came into our room and he said, Mom and Dad, I want to buy the P90X. Is that what it was called back then? P90X?
Yeah, the workout program.
Yeah. Yeah. And we said, great. He said, well, you buy it. And I used to always say to the kids, would you buy this with your own money? That's how, you know, when they would ask me for money to buy stuff. Anyway, I said, no, I'm not, you know, first I had to find out what it is. And I said, no, I think that's something that you can purchase. He was working at the time. He was teaching guitar lessons and had an income. And he said, okay, but I don't have all the money now. Can you put it on your credit card and then I'll just pay you back? And I said, we don't do things with credit. And he goes, no, I'll just pay you back. And, you know, I mean, he really wanted it. And it would have been just fine to put it on my credit card and maybe he would have paid me back and maybe he wouldn't have. You know, usually those payback things with kids never work out anyway. Yeah. Right. Sometimes you get the money and sometimes you don't. But I saw an opportunity for a lesson. And so I didn't indulge. And I said, when you have the money, you can pay me and I will put it on the credit card. So that's what happened. And that's what he did. But then there's other times when maybe a little bit of indulging it is okay. But you're right. It's just such a hard road to travel and figure it out.
Yeah. I mean, so I can think of two major instances in my life. The first one was when we moved to Texas in seventh grade. I really struggled for the first probably 2-3 weeks at school. It felt much longer than 2 or 3 weeks, much longer, mm-hmm. with making friends and, you know, going to lunch and not really knowing who I was hard. Sit with. I'm sure the temptation from you was like, all right, we'll just pull him out of school and I'll be his best friend and we'll hang out every day together. And just, you know, because that's how I would feel towards my kids. But
I wanted to go down and I wanted to change your schedule. Yeah. I wanted to go down and say to the kids, you will sit with my son and you'll be his friend.
He's a nice young man.
Nice boy.
He's, even though he's, you know, got glasses and a big gap in his teeth, he's cool. He's very cool.
That was horrible. It was hard. You'd come home every day crying. It was awful.
Tough. It was really tough. But resisting that urge to clear those hurdles for me, I think, developed in me, a life skill to be able to meet other people, take interest in what other people had to say, and really kind of developed interpersonal and social skills that have helped me out for the rest of my life, really. So again, huge growth opportunity, talking about lessons learned. Then the other one was I drove in high school, we had a kind of like a teenager car. It was a Ford Tempo, 1994 teal.
Yeah.
Not flashy or new, but it was appropriately vintage and retro.
Mm-hmm.
And I wrecked it going slow, just falling too closely behind the road that goes behind the police station in Keller. And everyone was kind of sitting on top of each other. And it was like a 3-car pileup. Someone hit the brakes and then they got rear-ended. That person got rear-ended and that rear-ended that person. I was like the fourth in a pileup. Mm-hmm. And I remember, you know, after filing the police report, getting picked up at the police station, just kind of being like, all right, so when are we going to replace the Tempo? And you and Dad just kind of looking at each other, looking at me and like, it was a fix. I thought we were going to go take the totally crunched 1994 Ford Tempo and spend, you know, thousands of dollars repairing it. It was worth probably $800. But
yeah,
I think not really knowing the ways of the world, I thought it was just like, okay, we crunch the front a little bit. Let's take it to the repair shop. We'll be back in action. Yeah. And you're like, no, this is how totaling it's a totaled. Car works. This is like the definition, the math behind it. And you handed me the keys to the old minivan, which was a 1997 Navy Blue Mercury Villager with busted up panels on the inside and cloth seats and scratches and dents and you name it. And I thought my life was over as I knew it. And I remember just being totally mortified and just begging and pleading for you. I worked part-time at the dry cleaner. I didn't have car money to buy a new car. And so just begging and pleading with you guys to buy me something cooler, something less quote unquote embarrassing that I would, you know, take to school. And you guys never budged on that. And despite I've made some bold claims as a kid to you that I would still be mad at you when I was 16 among them, as we've discussed in a previous episode, but also this too, that I would never be grateful despite you saying you'd be grateful for this life lesson. And I'm not admitting it now for the record.
Heavens no.
but I will tongue in cheek say there were definitely some, you know, some life lessons to be learned about getting over yourself and grateful for what's available and, you know, the means to get around and drive myself around and pal around and the humility that taught me, I thought was really good. So again, you know, that pull to give in to everything that your kids want, I think is really important. And as in those two instances, both really helped me develop as a person. And that served me very well for throughout the following years and the rest of my life.
Now, Daniel, you know, we're recording, right? Like
I didn't admit to anything. I didn't say thanks. I didn't say this was great. I'm saying it built some character.
I remember telling you that one day you would be giving a sacrament talk and thanking your parents for making you drive a minivan. Although I will say in hindsight, I mean, you got called soccer mom and, you know,
yeah,
a few other choice things. I mean, the fact was we just really couldn't afford a third car, but even still, I don't know. I do feel a little bad about that.
Not as bad as I felt parking it in the very corner of Keller High School, 30 minutes before school started, and sneaking into the building every day for my entire senior year. So
I know. And that van got passed down to Michael and then to Caroline. So it was a good, it was a good kid van.
Made the rounds.
Absolutely. It did. It was kind of a sad day when it was hauled off and away.
Unceremoniously.
Yeah. Yeah. To the wreckers. Yeah. And, you know, I think too, some, you know, when talking about this Zen parenting, you know, some kids' personalities don't allow for it. And I think, you know, some kids' life is going to be their teacher. And, sure. And, you know, I think we always strive for it. We always try to work for it and work with it and try to work with our children. But it takes also the cooperation or the willingness of the child to participate in that kind of a relationship as well. So, you know, if you're saying, well, I've tried and I keep telling my kids they can talk to me and I'm doing the things that, you know, that you're suggesting and it's just not working, you may have to look at this problem in a different way with whatever, you know, with your children, if that makes sense.
Totally. Absolutely. It's amazing to me how different they come, even so close together, just a couple years apart. Nothing's really changed in mine and Natalie's parenting style too drastically between child 1, 2, and 3, but they're just such different individuals and different spirits, you know?
Yeah, for sure. Well, Daniel, this is, as usual, it's always so fun to talk to you.
Likewise.
And especially about this subject. We're just so happy to hit
record this conversation, you know?
I know. That's the thing. I said that with to the girls. I said, you know, we just talk all the time. Just this time we just pushed record and you and I get to talk a lot and I love our relationship and I love you.
Well, thank you. Back at you, Mom. Love you and love you and Dad. And again, like I said, Natalie and I, we are trying our best to model our parenting styles off of this Zen parenting. And in large part, you know, we look to you and Natalie's parents, Robin and Jerry, who are also just wonderful, wonderful people. And we're trying our best to be more like you guys.
Well, that's nice of you to say, and I appreciate it. It's fun watching your children parent, you know, and see them just do so well with their children and love their families. And it's one of the best rewards of motherhood. I've said this in a number of podcasts and it bears repeating. The rewards of motherhood are slow in coming, but oh, so sweet. And watching your children parent your grandchildren in such loving ways is certainly one of those wonderful rewards. Well, I think to kind of draw this all together, I think it bears repeating that Zen parenting takes practice. Be patient with yourself. Be patient with your children. Choose your battles. Listen. And not overreact and just love them, you know, just love your children and enjoy them. There are days when they have to go out and mow the lawn because you can't, you've enjoyed them all. You're going to enjoy. And that's okay too. So, but thanks for listening and, please subscribe to my podcast. You can find it on, quite a few platforms. Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or you can listen to it on my website, onemomtoanother.com. And moms, please always remember, you are doing better than you.